This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, Writing the Sexy Way. 33 quickies to make readers read you and customers need you. And the author is Karen Christine Angermeyer. And Christine joins us now on Indie Book Publishing, this interview brought to you by Balboa Press. Hello, Christine.
Hello, Steve.
Great to have you on the show all the way from Germany. It's great to understand this principle that you put so well. You say this, how do we reach the heart of our readers and customers with our words? How do we make them want us, read us, book us, buy us? Writing the Sexy Way, the new book from Karen Christine Angermeyer, reveals it to you and shows you how to become literally irresistible. Boy, that's the key word there, Christine, irresistible. Mm-hmm. You can really make that happen?
Yes, you can. It's a learning, of course. You know, we are not born with 100% talent. We are born with the talent, and we develop our skills. And this book is on how to develop your creativity and really bring it to the limits, to your creative limits, and to develop your own writing style.
Well, before we get into some of the details about what you call this dance, this game of seduction between the writer and the reader, tell us a little bit about your background, Christine, and how this book came about.
I knew that I wanted to be a writer when I was 5 years old, actually. But then it happened that I studied photography engineering, which is a lot about numbers and formulas, as you can imagine. So it took me a while to come back to the world of stories and words. I was at the beginning of my 20s, 23, I guess it was, when my old childhood dream came up again and told me to write. And then that's what was the point when I started my own journey and learned a lot about writing from the best teachers from all over the world, from, of course, America and England and Germany. And during this process, experiencing that you can be a writer starting as an engineer who just had this dream, and to get to the point where you really reach the heart of your readers, made in being advertisement. I worked in advertising for a lot of years. Or may it be as a writer who is now, you know, building his existence, his financial life on writing books as I do. This was a journey, and I'm sharing parts of it in my book.
There are laws of attraction. Now, laws of attraction obviously go deep within the heart, deep within the soul, and you're trying to help us understand how to contact those kinds of laws of attraction within that reader.
As I said, I'm coming from advertisement, and in good advertisement, you learn pretty fast that you have to concentrate on your reader or on your customer and not on you yourself and your product. A lot of people write, for example, business mailings or websites or flyers or even books. They want to show us how great they are, you know. And in advertisement, you learn pretty fast how to concentrate on your customer and on the service you give to them. So the law of attraction, as I understand it, it is about reaching the heart of our readers. And we do this by writing emotionally, by daring to write emotionally, and by using images in our writing, for example, metaphors. So emotions and images that we create with our words are the two keys to attract the right readers into our lives.
Well, I look at your table of contents, and of course, being that we are talking about writing the sexy way. You've taken that metaphor and used it throughout your book. For example, part one, The Theory of Seduction, and you have, you know, what does sexy mean? I guess that's one thing that you need to define for us. What does sexy mean?
Being sexy on paper or becoming sexy on paper for me is like giving promises to our readers to say page one of my book or of my text is the promise to read page two and page three and so on. So we really guide our readers from one page to another, and we just have our words. You know, we have nothing but our words because in the normal case, our readers are not in the same room with us. So being sexy means, can I say this in English, means creating this connection to somebody who is not in the same room. And that's kind of a dance. And it's something very individual. That's why I'm talking about several seducer types or types of seducers, because there are as many ways to be sexy on paper as there are people on this planet. But the whole thing is about creating that connection between me and my reader. That's kind of a magical moment. And this book is about how to find the right words for that.
And I think we all know by reading magazines, newspapers, or watching TV, listening to the radio, we all know when something connects with us, certain words that just connects. We, in fact, a lot of times we never forget them.
Yeah, right. And that's where the magic starts, or the power of the pen, as we talked about it. The power of the pen is really something, you know, maybe I put it this way. I'm working as a speaker as well, so it's actually it's the power of the word. We have a great responsibility because we don't know as writers or copywriters or speakers which word in our book or in our speech moves somebody in the audience to his core and maybe causes him to change his life. That's a very dramatic way to put it. I'm aware of that, but I experienced this myself, how a speech or a book influenced me very much and really changed my life too.
So a sexy text, from your point of view, a sexy text, I guess the best way is to give us an example of making something sexy that maybe beforehand was just some good words, but they really weren't going to connect very well to the heart of the reader.
Yeah. Let's put it this way, or let's say one thing first. Not every text has to be sexy. I want to make this clear, because every text has a different purpose. You know, there are police reports or tax returns. They don't have to be sexy because they have another purpose. But every text that has, for example, the goal that I want to sell my book or that I want to sell my product, this text has to be sexy. And we become sexy by editing. It's not a matter that happens writing the shitty first draft, as Anne Lamott names it so nicely. We write the shitty first drafts, and then we edit them and edit them and edit them, making them more and more sexy. So a text, a shitty first draft that is not sexy at all because it is simply a draft and it has to be, I'm talking about the importance of these very, very first drafts, it becomes more and more sexy in the process of editing and in focusing on the reader and on the key message of the text and of the core emotion that wants to be transported by this text, because every text has a core emotion and we have to find it. So it is the process from first draft to final text that creates this sexiness.
So what tips can you give us? We don't have a whole lot of time to obviously cover everything in your book, but what tips can you give us, some specific tips that we can realize immediately?
Mm-hmm. Well, I was talking about emotion, and actually emotion is one thing that where people face a lot of challenges or difficulty in writing, especially in business writing, because it seems to me as if people walk into their offices and, you know, let their heart at the front door. So really get back into this emotional state and ask myself, what do I want to give? What kind of experience can I give my reader today? May it be on book writing or in business writing. What kind of emotional experience shall my reader have? And then writing really becomes fun to do. So first we can get into this emotion our text shall transport. And then as a second step, we can train every day to open up our senses and to see the world like a child again. Children compare things. They say, this smells like, or this feels like, or this sounds like. And this kind of awareness, this opening up our senses, it trains our brain to create the images and the metaphors I was talking about. And when these two things come together, emotions and images, and those two combined with a clear message I have in my text, then I can produce a wonderful product and a really sexy text. And one fourth thing is the uniqueness. For example, we could ask ourselves, what would my reader miss if my text or my book did not exist? And then we really connect to our intuition and to our uniqueness.
Well, some might feel about your metaphor, writing is like having sex with our readers, a little bit challenging. How would you answer that kind of a critic?
You will always have critics writing books. Every author knows that. You can see the Amazon reviews on my book. Here in Germany, you have the 1 stars and you have the 5 stars. So somebody told me that it's good to have both, because then a book or a text really moves his audience. And that's the way it is, and that's okay as it is. What I wanted to show here is really this game of seduction, this connection between our readers and us, and I wanted to create a metaphor that works as a roof for the whole content, because this book covers the whole process, really from relaxation, from calming our minds, from brainstorming to editing, and to connecting to our creative source. And this was such a huge mass of material, and I wanted to bring it under a really good roof. So this is the metaphor I chose, and I wanted to write a humorous book, you know, which is fun to read, which is kind of entertainment, and it's kind of infotainment, as we call it. So I didn't want to be disrespectful in any way to any reader, but I wanted to challenge them and, you know, make them smile with a twinkle of the eye and just move them to have fun and move them to feel secure again in their own creativity.
So everybody can write? There is that kind of spark within everyone?
Yes, everybody who wants to write. I would call it this way. As the famous poet and writer Johann Wolfgang von Goethe called it, that, you know, our wishes are heralds of our talents. He put it in a much nicer way, but that's the message of the sentence. I think that the wishes we have, they are the sign of the things that we want to produce and want to become. As I wanted to become a writer when I was 5 years old, as I told it from the beginning, but I didn't feel secure enough then and self-confident enough then to say, I want to be a writer. Very few children dare to say it this way. So I, for example, I chose the secure path, choosing a university program in engineering. So I think when we go back to our childhood dreams, we know very well these little sparks that told us to become a writer or a singer or whatever, and we should listen to them.
Christine, tell us how to get your book, Writing the Sexy Way.
You get it everywhere. You get it, of course, on Amazon. You get it by BalboaPress.com. You get it in the bookstore you prefer. You get it anywhere you want it. You get it as an ebook or a print edition, hardcover, and paperback.
We've been listening to author Karen Christine Angermayer. Angermayer is spelled Angermayer. Her book, Writing the Sexy Way. Christine, thanks so much for being with us on Indie Book Publishing.
Thank you very much. It was my pleasure, Steve. Thank you.
And this interview has been brought to everyone by Balboa Press.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Hi, everybody. This is Pete Dix of Beatles and Beyond. Why don't we all come together and hear some of the tracks off the latest Beatles release on this radio station? Yes, why don't you look up the schedules on this radio station and join me and Beatles listeners everywhere to hear these latest releases from the Beatles on Beatles and Beyond with Pete Dix.
Connect with Juliana and connect with what lies beneath. Friday afternoons at 4, 3 Central on TogiNet.com. Juliana is a marriage, family, and child therapist who wants people to connect. Connect with what lies beneath, those truths and answers. And through her counseling practice, she has helped others find their personal power and fulfill their dreams. And she wants to do the same for you here on Connect with Juliana. Through intimate discussions, intriguing subject matters, and the expertise of her guests. For more on the show and Juliana, check out her webpage. Connect with Juliana in media.com. Juliana will cover it all. Nothing is off limits. She wants to know what matters to you. Make the connection. Tune into TogiNet to connect with Juliana to find out the facts that could be hidden beneath the surface. Connect with Juliana on TogiNet to make a quality connection in your life. Friday afternoons at 4, 3 Central on TogiNet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
Greetings for Steve Jorgensen and for Indie Book Publishing, Balboa Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. The title of this book is Christ-Centered Consciousness, and our author is John T. Ryan IV. John, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
That's quite a name, John T. Ryan IV. What are the other three? Tell me about your history, your background.
Yeah, there is quite a family history with that name. All the previous John T. Ryans worked in for the Mine Safety Appliances Company, which is a company in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And my great-grandfather founded the company, and my grandfather ran it, and my father ran it. And I'm the first John T. Ryan who has not actually been a business executive.
Well, I would say shame on you, but I'm presuming by your history and by your biography that you're pursuing other interests. Tell me about your current preoccupation.
Well, I'm currently a student at Duquesne University in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I'm studying clinical mental health counseling and enjoying that quite a bit. The reason that I got interested in that was a spiritual awakening that I had starting in 2011, and that also has a lot to do with my book as well. But I decided that I wanted to help people heal, and that was my calling in life. And I had done some previous things in the past. I was in aviation for a while as a pilot, did that and did some flight instruction. But I decided that the mental health field is really my calling from God.
All right, and this book parallels that to some degree. You talk about Christ-centered consciousness. What motivated you to put this book together?
Well, I wrote the book because of an amazing spiritual healing that I had that started in 2011 in the context of a relationship with Christ. I experienced some really extraordinary mystical phenomena in this healing. For years, I had suffered from anxiety and depression and was sort of disconnected from my core self. I talk about that quite a bit in the book. My motivation was really to tell my story to as many people as possible because I was able to learn many spiritual things from the context of my relationship with Christ and was able to come to some rather life-altering realizations like that the presence of Christ was there in my own consciousness, that it wasn't, it was something that could be experienced daily, that God was not distant from me, God was not out there, God was out there and within. And the other real thing that inspired me to write the book was I felt that I had to write it because it had a service to the gay and lesbian community. I am a gay man, and I experienced the healing of my previously repressed sexuality. I had a very negative relationship with my sexuality for a long time, and Christ healed me from that type of relationship and into one of more acceptance and love and appreciating myself for who I was. And I felt that this was really, really important because there's been quite a bit of controversy between the gay and lesbian community and mainstream Christianity, and I felt that it was really important to come out there with an experience that I had had in terms of a relationship with Christ, which led to love and acceptance of my sexuality. So that was a big part of the reason I wrote my book as well. I realized that my spirit was also connected to God, that we are not, like again, that God was not something that was distant, that it was right there in my own consciousness, and that this was something that I could feel on a daily basis, moment to moment, if I paid proper attention to my own consciousness. It was these spiritual discoveries that I just feel needed to be conveyed to as many people as possible, but especially the gay and lesbian community, because it was really quite an awakening to me to realize how much Christ loved my sexuality.
And in the use of the term Christ, are you referring to what most people would understand as the New Testament Christ, or is this a spiritual kind of a spirit guide kind of Christ, or how would you describe it?
Yeah, there's the historical Jesus Christ who is referenced in the New Testament, and that's who I basically feel that I have this relationship with, is Jesus Christ of the New Testament. Yes, that would be accurate.
All right. And in your mentioning that Christ accepts you in your homosexuality, how would you describe that? Does he embrace your choices, or is he embracing you as a person?
It's really an embracing of the way that he created. I had an adversarial relationship with a lot of my feelings for a long time and was a source of a lot of pain in my life. And it was something that I couldn't see for a long time. I couldn't see that hatred was something that was greatly impacting my life. And when I began to have a true relationship with Christ, he provided some very amazing experiences to me in which I was able to feel his love for the entirety in which he had created me, and that included my sexuality. So, and that's when I really realized that I needed to write a book about the experience, because I felt that people needed to know, because I felt like I was getting such a clear picture of the way that Jesus felt, the universal Christ, the Christ that is eternal, felt about the way that he created me in my full, in everything about me.
Describe the process of putting your book together. You've been studying psychology and other elements of understanding the human psyche. Was there any of that that was in the process of putting this together?
Well, yes, I was a psychology major at Notre Dame, graduated in 1999. Most of my book deals more with sort of the deeply spiritual side of things and not as much in terms of mainstream psychology. There are some things that I definitely do talk about, though, that could fall under the definition or under the realm of sort of cognitive, behavioral kind of things. I talk a lot in the book about changing thoughts and changing behaviors and how that influences the way that one feels, and how that influenced the way that I felt, and how that helped me establish a relationship with Christ on a moment-to-moment basis. And so there definitely is some cognitive behavioral elements to my book that I believe are very important in terms of assisting others to develop a relationship with Christ and helping other people heal from their own psychological wounds.
And how long did it take you to put this book together?
I started writing the outline for the book in the summer of 2012, and the book was completed in its final edited version in July of 2013.
Oh, that's a pretty quick turnaround for this is your first book, correct?
Yes, correct. I really felt that I needed to stay on top of it as much as I possibly could, and to get it out there as soon as possible, because I felt that my message was very important.
And how would you introduce this to someone who doesn't know of your past or know of your particular history as a writer? How would you introduce this to someone?
Well, I would say that this book is important for anyone who's looking to have a conscious spiritual relationship with God that they can be aware of on a daily basis. I would say that this book has some rather revolutionary concepts, like the fact that, as I stated earlier, there's been some controversy between mainstream Christianity and the gay and lesbian community, and I would say that this book sort of tries to bring that controversy to peace and in understanding the way that Christ feels about the gay and lesbian community. And the other important thing about introducing this book is a sense that it's sort of a guide in terms of how to establish a relationship with Christ that one can actually feel. And there's a lot of theological books out there. There's a lot of books that have theory, but this is more of a chance to put things into practice on a moment-by-moment basis to establish a relationship with a conscious relationship with Christ that can be felt, and one that can be expanded into, you know, there basically are no limits because God is unlimited. There's no limits to how far one can go in this process.
Well, tell me about this aspect of your book. Is there any one particular message besides the general theme that you'd like readers to take away from reading it?
In terms of one, that it's possible to establish a relationship with Christ that you can be consciously aware of on a moment-by-moment basis, that in your own thoughts, feelings, your own will, your own conscience, that it's possible to establish that, and that it does require some life-changing behaviors, some life-altering experiences, but that basically the main point is that it's possible to have a completely conscious relationship with Christ that is there on a daily basis.
Some of the chapters are Healing in Christ, Tiny Little Spirits, The False Self versus the Real Self, Mistakes, Work is Love, and finally, your final chapter is Feeling Jesus' Love. This is a book that may be discovered as controversial to some, but to others a healing process. It's 172 pages, and was there anything that was difficult about putting this together, a challenging part?
I think it's always a challenge to be a first-time author. You don't have any previous experience of writing a book. I've never written anything remotely close to this long in my entire life. And the biggest challenge for me was putting the experiences into words, because many of the spiritual experiences that I talk about were experiences of consciousness which weren't necessarily intellectual in nature and are not easily described. But I did my best to try to do that. And what I really tried to do my best in is try to explain to the reader the things that have to be done in order to build that conscious relationship.
Well, thank you, John, for sharing your story. The title of the book, again, is Christ-Centered Consciousness, and our author is John T. Ryan IV. John, where do we get copies of your book?
You can get it from the Balboa Press website or also from third-party websites.
Thanks again for joining me today. For Balboa Press, this is J. Douglas Barker.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Join us for Self-Aid Success Stories with Helen Wu, Wednesday nights at 10, 9 central on toginet.com. Helen Wu was born and raised in San Francisco's Chinatown, and after a very difficult upbringing, fighting depression, abuse, and addictions, she finally finds herself genuinely happy inside and out. Helen believes in taking our positive thinking and doing something positive to achieve a positive outcome. She's here to make a positive difference in your life, to be your game changer, your aha moment mentor. She's ready to help both men and women get into a better place. Helen Wu is also the author of Self-Aid Success Stories, 25 Success Stories from Successful Entrepreneurs. Inspired by Ellen DeGeneres, Helen wants the world to know that just because we find ourselves in a difficult situation doesn't mean we have to stay there. We can aid ourselves to a better life. So join us for Self-Aid Success Stories with Helen Wu, Wednesday nights at 10, 9 central on toginet.com.
Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, That Melvin Bray, and the author, Margaret McBride. And Margaret joins us now on Indie Book Publishing, this interview brought to you by Abbott Press. Hello, Margaret.
Hi, Steve.
Great to have you with us. This is one of those compelling stories that I think digs deep into our hearts and souls because, unfortunately, if it hasn't happened in the family where there's been alcoholic problems, abuse, we know somebody who is going through it and obviously suffering because of it. But there is a happy ending, if you will, to this story, isn't there?
Oh, yes, definitely, for everyone.
But it's an individual decision, isn't it, about whether you can go through all of that and live through this trauma and abuse. You have to make a decision somewhere, I guess, that you're going to get through this.
Well, that is true. And some, it's easier for some than others. I think that's really based on what we come into this world with, you know, our emotional DNA, I guess. You know, being of 9 children, some of us were emotionally stronger than others, and we weren't as scarred, as others.
And had to deal with an alcoholic father for obviously your whole lifetime. Practically, and right up to the time just before he died, he gave it up. But it was a lifetime. That's what I'm sure that lifetime must feel like more than one life at times.
Yes, it really did. You know, living in that house, never knowing what would happen next. What we knew what could happen, but just didn't know exactly when it would happen. But that's the truly scary part, especially for children.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, before we get on with some of the details, the messages, the themes of your book, tell us a little bit about your background, what you're doing now, how this book came about.
Well, it was 4 years ago, a little over 4 years ago, and I actually was sick with a very bad cold, and my niece in Virginia, Tina Putman, wanted me to read The Shack, and she said while I was sick, I could just, she was going to send the book to me, and I'd heard a lot about it. It was very popular at the time, and I didn't know anything really about it except that it was a spiritually based book, and being a Christian, I was going to read it. At any rate, Tina sent it on to me while I was sick, and so I read the book, and it touched me in such a way that that book is all about forgiveness, and I realized that
I was carrying a heavy, heavy grudge and had been all these years against my father. And I didn't realize I had never forgiven him. And all the ways I was holding a grudge against him, it became very clear to me after I read that book. And so I started a little journal and writing about the ways, the things that I was going to forgive him for, which caused me to start going back to my past. And I went back to, as the opening of my book, it's I was 5 years old, and that was the first time that I remember ever seeing my father as an alcoholic, and that's where the book starts. It was my first memory. But I was writing all these things down, and that's what caused me to literally just continue writing, and I realized I had about a long legal pad, not the short one, full of notes and how to forgive, and but again, inspired by the shack. And it really turned into a 4-year sabbatical on, you know, forgiving. And I reclaimed my faith, I guess you would say. Now when I say, you know, I truly am a Christian and I know how to forgive and I know how important it is, I really feel good when I make that statement. And so, you know, 4 years later, you know, I have the book. And I'm happy about it.
Well, it's that heartfelt story about friendship and hope and forgiveness, and it deals with you, Maggie, and your friend, childhood friend, Lizzie, and you're trying to somehow get some self-discovery and personal healing, of course, of dealing with all of these problems that you had to deal with for so long. But we've got to get to the title, That Melvin Bray. Now, who is Melvin Bray?
Well, Melvin Bray was one of my drinking buddies. And again, in the book, my mother always would refer to him as that Melvin Bray because, you know, she would say things like, you know, he shouldn't be hanging out with your dad or associating with him because, you know, he was 10 years younger than my father. And but he was sort of a lost soul himself. And but he wasn't a bad person at all. And he just was, his friendship with my father caused him a lot of pain. And mother would, again, she would refer to him as Melvin Bray. And they worked together. But I will say that, you know, I took some personal liberties as the author to create an avenue around that Melvin Bray. And I can't divulge any of that right now because it would give the story away. But that character in my life, growing up with him, was so, it was just prominent. And I loved the way mother would refer to him as that Melvin Bray. And so I just thought that was a very good title. When I decided that this was going to be a book, I decided it was going to be that Melvin Bray.
So did you end up with a drinking problem?
No. I'm a great grandma. Not a great grandma. I'm just a good grandma, I should say. I'm a good grandma, and I love that title. I'm not a great grandma yet. But no, I do not. Even though I talk in the book a lot about, you know, Lizzie and Maggie do a lot of toasting and wine, you know, everyone who drinks does not have a problem with alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
There are those who absolutely should not drink. The first drink is like poison, and my daddy was one of them. But I've seen it firsthand, not just from him, but from other, you know, loved ones and friends. And alcohol is not for everyone, you know. Everyone shouldn't have a Ferrari. They drive too fast. And mm-hmm. Alcohol is not for everyone. But to answer your question, no.
But there were those in the family who struggled because of your father's example,
yes.
I guess.
Yes. We've had two that have had struggles with alcoholism. So yes. And again, you know, I'm not a professional in alcoholism. I can only tell you what I lived through and survived and was exposed to as a firsthand, experiencing it firsthand in my home. But again, we were not all the same. some of us are very strong and have no problems with alcohol, and then there were a couple that did have problems.
Would you call this a self-help book?
At first, I was asking myself that this morning. Do I really call this a self-help book? I would call it, definitely a self-help book for me. It was truly what I needed in my life and at the time. And again, never having any expectations of writing a book. I've never thought of myself as ever writing a book. So it definitely helped me. And I guess for others, I think that it does the subject matter and also all the things that are around the subject matter, just living in the house and growing up and loving one another and being close and looking after each other and working, you know, nine kids working together, and all the other things that come with that. I think it could help others, someone who may be experiencing some of these things that I have and my siblings and growing up. But I can only say it certainly helped me, Steve, but I would like to think it certainly could be a path and a road, a map to how to forgive. Because, again, it's truly about the joy of forgiving and the joyful life one can have once they've forgiven. Whatever it is they need to forgive someone for, and maybe even forgive themselves, you know. I first had to find out how to forgive my father. And then after I went through this, and I have worked through it, I then had to find out and ask forgiveness for my own grudge and my own sinner's grudge of holding that in for so long and not forgiving him. I had to ask for forgiveness for that. So I had to forgive myself, and then God forgave me. So I had to ask for God's forgiveness. So self-help all the way around, I think, depending on who needs what.
Mm-hmm. Do angels walk among, do angels walk among us? Are they there? Is that part of your story?
Most definitely. Most definitely. There are angels. There may be one right there and you just don't know it. But my angels, I've talked about the earthly angels whom I believe in my faith that they are definitely, you know, they are messengers from God. They're sent here to help us through hard times, to guide us, to lead us. And we may never know that they are angels. May never know that. Some people, I do believe, know angels. They have that gift. They know it. They feel it when they're there. For the most part, most of us, I believe, and certainly myself, I just know and trust and believe that I could be sitting next to an angel, on the bus or standing in line at Kroger, you know, and that they may not be there for me. They may be there for someone else, you know, but they're here as messengers from God to help us through hard times and to guide us and to comfort us.
So your desire for the reader is to really feel the depth of this story, to really stir the souls of people who read. And you'd have to say, because you're so honest and this was kind of took some courage to write this.
Well, yeah, as a matter of fact, I couldn't write some of it the way it really happened because it was just too painful, some of the things that happened. But I got enough in there. They were painful enough, and I think they spoke loudly enough of what the situation was like, you know. But I must say, I am very light-hearted. I thought I was light-hearted before. You know, I'm basically a happy person. I love the joy in everyone. I love the joy in myself. I love being joyful and bringing joy. But I'm very light now. There was such a weight lifted off me. It's hard to express, really. It just went away. It just got lighter and lighter and lighter as I wrote about it. So some things I couldn't write about because it was just too painful.
Too many disappointments, too much of, I guess, early anger for abuse, these kinds of phantoms that occur in our lives. And so the big question, I think the big question to wrap up our discussion, and you ask it when there is anger in the heart, will anger or love prevail?
Well, again, from my personal experience, I know I was way more angry than I realized until I got into this process of the forgiving, you know, trying to forgive my father. What do I do here, really? I know I'm unhappy and carrying this around all these years. There's got to be something wrong here, and I finally connected it. That was my problem. You know, on a human and soul level, I was sad in my heart for so long about what could have been and what wasn't because of my father's alcoholism. But then I had to say, but because of my mother's love and faith and for the Lord, she raised 9 children that way. You know, and she really was our rock, and she wanted us to be happy. Although she could not free herself from him for whatever reason until, you know, he finally left. But it would have made it a lot easier on all of us if he were just not there after a while. If you can't help somebody, you need to get away from them. And what was the question?
Well, the question is, again, when there is anger, when there is anger in the heart, will anger or love prevail?
Well, again, it's quite succinctly, the answer to that is love can prevail, and I'm a perfect example of that. You know, I actually love my dad now. I love my daddy. I love him, and I'm so sorry that he could not get healed and get help and to, you know, be well. And so, yes, love can prevail, and but forgiveness is part of that, and realizing that love and enjoying being free of all the sadness and the pain that all of that brought to me early on in my life and my siblings and everyone who loved us, you know. It is truly not an individual's problem. Being my father was the alcoholic, he was the individual, but it was a total family problem. Everyone suffers in the family, everyone. So, but love can prevail, and absolutely will. If that's what you want, it can prevail.
We've been listening to Margaret McBride. She is the author of her book, That Melvin Bray. Margaret, tell us how to get your book.
Well, of course, Abbott Press is my publisher, and you can go online to Abbott Press. You can also go to Amazon, Books A Million, Barnes & Noble. It should be in the stores now as well, Barnes & Noble for sure. But that's it. You can go online, and I think they can get it to you in 2 or 3 days. It's in all forms. It's, you know, the e-book. It's, you know, for your Kindle, and, of course, paperback and hardback.
Thank you so much, Margaret, for being with us on Indie Book Publishing.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you so much.
And this interview has been brought to everyone by Abbott Press.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen. Join us again next week at noon Eastern as Steve interviews another great author.